When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everybody, you are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. I'm going to start out with, I'm going to say a few things before I introduce my lovely guest. I sometimes listen back to podcasts. I try not to because I don't like the things that I say sometimes, or I'm very self-critical. I know that I say ums and likes too many times within a 1 minute period. And I am an old lady valley girl. I cannot stop saying like. I've tried and I can't. And so sometimes I think when I listen back to a recent episode, I usually listen to the beginning just to make sure that everything is running smoothly, and I have the best editor, so I'm never really worried about Celeste not doing something right. But I just get really, I just sometimes want to listen to how I sound because I'm vain, I have a large ego, all of the following. But I apologize sometimes if I say like too much, because that's just me. That's who I am. I will always be that little 1980s valley girl trapped in an older woman's body. I'm not that old, but you know what I'm trying to say. So that's how I'm going to introduce this episode today. I'm about to get on an airplane tomorrow to go back to Washington, D.C. to, sadly, I lost a friend, and it's a very sad thing, but I'm going to be seeing my childhood friends, and I'm just sad. I'm very sad for where I'm going and what I'm going to have to go through. But what I'll say is loss and grief are universal. And I'm not going to go into detail with the friend that I lost, but I will say he was an amazing, amazing human being. I've known him since I was a little kid. His wife was one of my best friends from high school. His sister I've known since I was in third grade as well. And my heart is with them. My heart is with all the people that are going through some sort of loss right now. And I'm just going to start the podcast that way. I wish I could start it a little cheerier, but that's how I'm starting today.
We've all been put here for a reason, and we all deserve acceptance.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age, and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
I would like to introduce my guest, Danny Sather. Did I say it correct or what? I'm always nervous about how I introduce somebody and if I'm going to butcher their last name. Her organization is called Suffer Out Loud. She is the executive director. Welcome, Danny, to the podcast. I'm honored to have you.
Thanks. Thank you.
You are so welcome.
Sather, which is the difference between a vocalized TH and like the silent TH, but it doesn't actually matter.
Did I say it right, though?
You did. So I have family in Texas and then family in Montana, two different sides of the country. In Texas, it's Sather. And then in Montana, it's Sather. So the TH is not, there's no vocal behind the TH. There's a th as opposed to the th. And so they say
which one Sather. Do you prefer? Because you're a Montana girl.
Honestly, Sather.
Sather.
Doesn't matter. As long as
I like the last name, and
then we're good.
Yeah, I like, well, nobody should do that. I like how
the like how in different areas of the country somebody might say your last name in a different way. I always think it's really interesting. I'm really honored to have you on today. So this episode could be triggering. I like to always tell my audience that before they listen. The reason that I do this podcast on a weekly basis is my main agenda is to be for people to feel comfortable and come to my podcast to learn more about mental health awareness, suicide prevention, suicide awareness. And Dani's organization, Suffer Out Loud, in which she's the executive director, that's what she talks about, and that's what her organization does. So why don't you tell my audience before we start a little bit about Suffer Out Loud?
Yeah. Also, I just want to say I'm sorry that you're going through grief. The podcast is probably going to spiral into a grief conversation because that's what I talk about.
Me too. You've come to the right place. So, I mean, I'm sad I debated on talking about it this episode, but because I'm about to go on an airplane and fly and I know where I'm going and I know how sad it's going to be. I just think it's really important to recognize how people are I will forever be in grief for the rest of my life for my losses. But grief isn't like a short period of time. Grief can last a lifetime. And I say that all the time because I've gone through a lot of loss. But it's always hard when it's a sudden thing, you know? But thank you so much for saying that. I really appreciate it. And I know you've gone through a lot in your own life. But before we get into that, tell me a little bit about what your organization is and does.
I appreciate you saying that. I have, I've been asked more times than I would have liked to officiate or lead funerals or speak on behalf of, grieving folks in loss, people who I share that loss with. So I really appreciate 100% you saying that it is universal. And I think it's honestly the one universal thing that we can say. That doesn't mean that grief isn't really super unique. Mm-hmm. Everybody's grief is so subjective and uniquely their own. And I think it's a gift in that way. I always say to people that it's the club that you don't want a card to. Like it's the club that you're in now, but you don't want to be in it, but you're in it and it makes it really special. So anyway, Suffer Out Loud was founded in 2017. Our founder is Cassie Jackson. She's this really beautiful, wonderful, amazing woman who lives here in Bozeman, Montana. And she lost her sister to suicide. I believe it was 2008. And after that loss, she kind of realized that she felt more isolated than ever before after that because people don't know how to respond. Oh, hey, I lost my sister to suicide. What do you say to that? How do you console? You can't. And that's, I think, true with any amount of grief, but specifically suicide loss is really difficult. And so she, 10 years later in 2017, she founded Suffer Out Loud because she was like, where's the gap? Like there are people doing the work here in Montana. It maybe not enough. But there are people doing really hard work and working to build the resources that we have for mental health care. And then there are people who need it. So where's the gap? Why aren't we asking for it? And so she focused on that gap because we don't provide direct services. We're not licensed to provide direct services. And as far as like mental health care, you don't have to be licensed, by the way, to be to intervene in a crisis. But we are not licensed to provide that mental health care as like a therapeutic sense, an mm-hmm. ongoing therapeutic sense. And so she realized that there were a number of different barriers. One of them was the stigma. Actually, the biggest one, I think, which still exists, is the stigma.
The stigma, yeah.
Yeah, Montana's really much like a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of state. And so stepping over that stigma is a big one and kind of normalizing talking about it. The other one is obviously access to demographics, specifically for BIPOC folk, in my opinion, especially our native populations, our native nations here, they don't necessarily have access to mental health care professionals who share a same background with them, a same demographic.
Can you backpedal a little bit? Backpedal. That's such a weird word. Can you explain what BIPOC means for my audience?
Sorry, yeah. BIPOC is Black Indigenous People of Color.
Okay.
Basically, you know, the overarching umbrella for anybody who's not white, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, and our biggest minority population in Montana is Native Indigenous folks. And me speaking as a non-Native person, I am Black. My dad was Black. My mom was white. I don't have a full repertoire or study behind me to speak on behalf of them. So whatever I say about Native people, take it with a grain of salt. But I do know that, like, if I don't know it, as a person who has invested in advocating for BIPOC folk here in Montana, I imagine that a lot of other people here don't. And there are some very specific sensitivity trainings and just different kinds of approaches to serving Indigenous folks in Montana that are necessary to honoring their backgrounds. That need to happen. And we are a predominantly white state. And so those trainings don't always happen if you don't see it in front of you. So, yeah, I mean.
So Expand and Impact was started specifically in Montana, but this is a universal thing. I mean, especially for people of color, I can tell you that I have interviewed many people of color, and they talk about how it's just not acceptable to talk about mental health in their culture, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it's another layer of pressure, I think, added to folks who are trying to prove themselves as worthy of humanhood, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And if you're not perfect as a person of color, those flaws can be detrimental or even fatal. Most of the past high profile cases of Black specifically, but BIPOC folk who have been on the receiving end of fatal police brutality, and I hate using that word because I don't like to make like race in to paint it within this political frame, mm-hmm. Because it's not, me being born half Black is not political. But most of them have been in response to calls that have happened because somebody was in a mental health care crisis. And so, I think there are other means to addressing these. It doesn't mean that maybe they didn't have, a weapon or didn't seem scary to the neighbors, but I also think that there are just there are a number of different means that could have been put in place before some of these really dangerous instances took lives of Black folk in Montana, or not in Montana, in the U.S. That being said, Suffer Out Loud is not specifically a BIPOC organization. We work to serve anybody, literally anybody who wants access to mental health care.
Well, let me ask you, why you put on the bio, why does Montana have the highest suicide rate in the country?
I don't think I can give you
a specific answer.
I don't think I can give you a specific answer. I can give you some of my own theories and some of the things that I've taken away from the research that I've done.
Okay.
One reason is, weirdly enough, and there have been studies, regions with higher elevations have a positive correlation with higher suicide rates. And it's really? Just like, yeah, it's this kind of ongoing lack of oxygen or less oxygen than other places in the country. So there has been a correlation between like the elevation, because you don't have a regular source of oxygen that is as high as other places, that it kind of, I guess, affects the way that your brain works, or the way that your brain manages your emotions. I can't give you any more than that, but that is one really interesting theory. The biggest one, I think, is just being in a rural place where you don't have immediate access to help. We do obviously have places like the Help Center, which is located here in Bozeman, and they run our 988 line. And they do, I think, run 24/7 like crisis intervention. In addition to the 988 line, I think you can walk in there and see a crisis therapist. We have the Hope, I think it's the Hope House. There are a number of different options here because we all know that it's super needed. But access in general, like for super rural areas, it's just not there. Like, where do you go? And calling the police just doesn't help. It can escalate it. So lack of access, the pull your bootstraps up like mentality is a big thing. Like, oh, I'm not a man if I ask for help.
There a higher, because I know in general, so not only like for the state of Montana, but throughout the United States, you know, our suicide rates have quadrupled since COVID. I feel like people are constantly sending me articles because they know what I do. Another about somebody else taking their life. So we obviously have an epidemic going on in our country. I feel like every week I turn on the news and it's somebody new, you know. But I find that specifically for men too, because men have the issues of, you know, I always feel there's certain things. I always feel lucky that I'm a female in a lot of ways. Okay. One way is that women talk. We usually talk about our problems. We like to get in groups. We like to talk. That's just something we do. Whereas men are taught from a really young age to bottle it all up. You're not a man. Like you just said, pull up your bootstraps. And so it's a sign of weakness. I mean, you would be shocked. I have a lot of women that come on this podcast, and I do have men that come on and they share their stories of, you know, whether it's suffering from like debilitating panic attacks or being suicidal, whatever it is. But it's so much harder to get male guests to be open to talk about these things. So it really is a passion of mine to kind of figure this out. And if there's a way that we could break this stigma and get men more open to talk about it, I don't know. I feel like I'm so Pollyanna about it, because when I came out with my own story, just so you know, my background, my audience probably is like, shut up, we don't need to hear your story again, but I'll tell it you.
I do. I need to know it.
Oh, well, so I went through this like horrific, horrific period of my life right before COVID. It was a perfect storm of the trauma from my childhood just bubbling up. I had a really bad friend breakup from a girl that I thought was my really close, good friend, and a bunch of mean girl moms just like kind of gang up on me and trash me, like really honestly trash me across town. And I live in LA, but I live by the beach, so the outskirts. And then it was just like everything went wrong. Then COVID happened. Then I'm sitting there not able to deal. I started having horrible, horrible panic attacks. I was in a situation with work where I couldn't like really deal because my panic attacks were getting so bad. And I just found myself for a solid 6-month period I could not shake this feeling of wanting to get out every day. That's all I thought about. Every night I would lie in bed and think about this. And then one day I realized I have two daughters. I lost my dad at 13. And I was like, you know, I'm not going out this way. This is not the way I'm going to go out. So then I decided I was going to take my life back And it doesn't mean that every day is perfect. And it doesn't mean I don't struggle still, because believe me, I do. Mm-hmm. And we all do. I mean, we really all do in different ways. We just, not everybody's as outspoken and a loud mouth as I am, because I figured I can either do something and like turn this pain into purpose and help other people with my story. And then maybe if I talk about this a lot, like kind of build the fire, talk about our own stories, then the fire will spread. And then people will say, well, if she can talk about it, maybe I can talk about it too. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that is why this whole podcast happened to begin with. And so when I have men on, or I have people on like you, it lights my soul, you know, it really honestly does, because it makes me go, okay, like, let's try to figure this out. I'm very Pollyanna about it. I really believe deep down that there's a way to make this not as big as it is. And so when somebody like you comes on and you deal with this on a daily basis, I just want answers, just like you want answers. And you have your own story, which I know, which we're going to talk about. But any thoughts on my big, giant, muffled sob story, like life story? I don't know.
I have a super weird thought. I have a background in theater.
Oh, you do?
In theater as an actor, yeah. And one of plays I was in was opposite. It was a community written, you know, one act play fest, and I was playing opposite Pollyanna. And she at the time was my best friend, and we also had a falling out. And so first of all, I'm sorry, breaking up with a friend is almost worse than breaking up with your loved one, like a man, I guess, or a woman, or whoever it is that you're dating. It's heart-wrenching, but it happens, and usually happens for the best. But second of all, my friend was the Pollyanna, and I was this person, and the only lines I remember from that play was gray. I said gray so many times, gray, 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 and gray. Everything was gray. And I was like, shit, she actually is Pollyanna, because she thinks everything is possible. And here I am sitting, and she can't step into my shoes and understand that, like, I see the world crumbling around me sometimes. And I don't want you to say that it's going to be okay. Because I don't think it is sometimes. But I do still have hope, and I think it's okay to not be okay sometimes. And so it was just kind of a weird connection that I had in your story. Because we need Pollyannas. We need Pollyannas to be like, hey, buck up, babe. We can do this. We can muscle through. You can spend time in the gray area, but eventually you're going to have to like dig out of that. But I think, as far as connecting with men around mental health, we have three really beautiful, wonderful men on our board at Suffer Out Loud, who have very specific connections to our mission. And I think they struggle just as much as I do in figuring out how to bring them into the conversation. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it, I think it just takes time. And it does take effort as much as time. Like, I will put out, we do monthly workshops because we are rural. And so being in rural areas means that, like, part of our mission is providing tools for folks to get through those mental health moments. And it could be macrame, it could be water painting, it could be yoga or biking, it could be any number of things. We've had so many wonderful, beautiful workshops, and it's just like, whatever you latch onto. The whole point is like, let's give the community these tools for free so that when they are at their lowest, they have these things. And so, you know, we've tried fly tying for fly fishers, and I've tried to reach out to even gun companies to be like, hey, can we do a workshop on like gun safety, making sure that lethal means aren't available in the house? And then talk about the fun part of having a gun as a hunter, like how do you aim? How do you What are the methods of hunting? I don't hunt. I'm a vegetarian.
I'm a pet. Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot of hunting. There's a season where people you live in
Montana, so it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I know there's a lot.
Can you just at least put a tarp over it? Like, there's a moment where you just see trucks driving down the street, and I'm like, I don't want to see your trophy. Like, I can't.
Yeah, that would just upset. That would devastate me. There's a reason I don't live in Montana, although I did enjoy Yellowstone. I'm not gonna lie. Something you said about everything being gray and your story that struck me is. I get that, but I don't want myself to, like, I feel like when I got to the point of, and I'm going a little bit off the center right now, but when I got to that point of being so low and so dark and so bad, and I'll use your word gray, because that's how it was, but for me, it was darker than gray. That wasn't the way I was my entire life. Like, I was always like a fighter, and I always saw things like the glass half full. I don't know why, but I was like that for a really long time. And I think that's why I suppressed and pushed down all of my things for so long. And I didn't want to see things gray. But
yeah, but would you know? How would you know unless you saw things gray? That's my thing.
Yeah.
It's like, if you see things in color for the rest of your life, how did you even know that gray existed until you reached gray? And that makes all of the color so much more vibrant and brilliant. And I think that's why at Suffer Out Loud, or me in general, if you would allow me in a really embarrassing way, that my friends are probably going to make fun of me, to go down a rabbit hole here shortly.
Go right ahead. That's what we're here for.
Okay. I am a major depressive. I have major depressive disorder. I have generalized anxiety. I have ADHD. I have all of the things that tend to go together, right? And it's fine. And it's fine now, but it wasn't fine when I was coming up in school. Like, I was in special ed. I was told that I was stupid. I was made fun of for everything, not just being stupid, but also having curly hair or being black. I was called the N-word. I all of the weird trauma things that people grow up with in school, we all have them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to escape that and be like a popular girl, until I went to grad school. And one of my teachers, who I have a crush on to this day, her name is Dr. Hamara, and she's brilliant. One of the smartest people that I've ever met. Introduced me to Buteau. And Buteau is a dance form that came out of the avant-garde kind of dance era, founded or created by, his name is Hijikata Tatsumi. He also created with somebody, and I only remember his name is Ono, and that's my bad, because I'm like a weird dark human, and like Hijikata was the dark side of Buteau, and then Ono was like the light side of Buteau.
Yeah.
And when I learned of him, it was literally right after I'd learned that my mom had cancer. And then...
Do you mind asking how old you were when that happened?
26.
Okay.
And she made it through. And it was right before I learned that my dad had cancer, which he passed when I was 27 from cancer.
I'm sorry.
So the Buteau thing pulled me through it. It's beautiful. It's incredible. And anybody who's listening, if you Google Buteau, it's B-U-T-O-H, and you watch the Hijikata Tatsumi version of it first, it's going to be disturbing if you don't understand the theory behind it. So behind it is this idea that they look to the earth, they look down, they ground themselves in the earth. And the one specific thing that I took away from it was that, like, you cannot die unless you stop moving. And that was so beautiful for me, because even in death, you don't die because your body begins to decompose and you become this beautiful otherness of plants or whatever it is that you move into. Without boring everybody with all the details around it, what it taught me was that like light and beauty is only possible when you can embrace and accept the darkness, pain and suffering of humanity. And that is when I realized that like, oh, my grief is a gift. It's a gift. Yeah. I don't want it, but it's the gift that I didn't know I needed. And so that's kind of where I sit around that gray area. It's like, yeah, that grayness, when you live in gray for the first time, it sucks. But then you realize it sucks only because you knew color once before.
Oh my God, you're going to make me, well, you are making me cry, but that's a beautiful thing to say because it is so true. I mean, and again, struggling with major depressive disorder, ADHD, feeling different, bullying, all of that stuff. I mean, this shapes us as human beings, right? We come out. This is the thing that always kills me. We come out, at least I did. It came out so like happy, right? I mean, I witnessed the loss of my sister at 2. She passed away, and it happened basically like I witnessed it. So it was really awful, but I don't remember it. It's in my brain somewhere and I can't escape it. I know it's there because it pops up. But I did, yeah, in my body, in my weird core memories, but I push it away in a way, you know, and I was always able to like, I mean, this episode should be called The Colors of the Rainbow and Gray. Because I was always able to, like I said earlier, be like, well, the cup is half full. And then you would say, no, the cup's half empty. And then giving your example of what you gave. But what it's so true. My grief, just like your grief, is a gift. And it took me a really long time, going to get emotional, to really honestly realize that what happened to me a few years ago and that the darkest place, I don't wish that place on literally anyone. Well, maybe one person. I'm joking. It was like when people are mean girls, like there's nothing worse, like you said, than a mean girl, because women are so freaking fantastic and we have so many gifts, but we're taught from a young age to pin ourselves against each other and be jealous. And so when women are mean and they want to gang up against people, it's really freaking painful and it sucks. And it takes away that little teeny innocence that we went to school, like you and I went to school, like can't wait to meet new friends in school. And then Susie like says, nobody likes you, or you're ugly, or you're half black, or you're chubby, whatever it is. And it's like that little piece of you, that's the little piece of you that's chipped away, right? And then the continuation of like the chipping and the chipping and the chipping. And then you hide. And you, like, at least for me, I kind of like evolved into this other person until I realized one day after like all the grief and all the pain and all the stuff, like where I got to that boiling point of like pretty much a nervous breakdown where I went, I'm taking my freaking life back. I'm a mom. Yeah. I'm cool. Like, I'm a cool lady. I don't always think that. Just like, you're a freaking cool, badass lady. I'm cool. I'm fun. I'm funny. I'm like kind of a pain in the ass. I say like way too much. I say way too much. There's like, I have more flaws than anybody. I can be annoying. My husband doesn't like me a lot. Yeah, like we have all kinds of flaws. Yeah. But that's part of like the human experience. So when you really break this down, and nobody wants to grieve. Nobody wants to like hear, like in your case, like my mom has cancer and a year later, my dad has cancer and my dad died. Like why? Why do these things freaking happen? This isn't fair. It sucks. But I will tell you that I can tell, even just sitting with you for a short time are pretty freaking cool. And I would way rather sit with people that are real and they do interesting things. Like the majority of my guests, I would say 99.9% of my guests that have come on I've just like, I'm in awe by, and I feel like every week that I get to do this and meet somebody like you is just a tremendous gift. So my grief turned in and evolved into this, just like your grief turned in and evolved into what you do, which is helping other people, which is like, no, there, it's not, that's not like a thing. You know what I'm saying? Most people don't live their lives getting beaten down to turn it around. So I hope that your gray is really not always gray for you, and it turns more into like a pink or something beautiful.
I'll talking soon before I cry.
Oh, honey. I'm just hold it in. I cry literally every episode. Like every episode, there's at least like one drooling snot bubble come out of my nose or a tear and an ugly cry. So it just happens. I mean, that's what life's about.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. This time of year is the worst. I feel like I can't do anything and I can't enjoy my dinner because I can't taste my food and I can't work out because I feel tired and distracted. I can't even feel like I can host this show because my voice sounds like a duck. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D, designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. I feel like I've been using Claritin D for probably a few months now, and I have really noticed a difference. I can work out. I'm not feeling like my eyes are watering and my nose is all stuffed up. I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But going back to what we really are kind of going off track, but I'm fine with it because I think my audience probably wants to hear about you a little bit more. I love what you do in your organization, but I want to hear more about, because I really like to interview people and have people on that talk about their own mental health struggles, right? I think it's really important because then it can normalize getting a diagnosis of ADHD. I was diagnosed with ADD in seventh grade. I'm still here. I'm not dumb like I thought I was for all those years, just like you're not. We're just different. We learn differently. But tell me about how this evolved into like the diagnosis of like major depressive disorder and all the kind of things, that hard things that you went. Do you mind going back a little bit? As yeah. I catch you crying.
No, I'm good. I'm
okay.
Good.
I'm sorry about I'm that.
No. I work for a company called Suffer Out Loud, so I suffer out loud.
I feel like I suffer out loud too. Maybe I should work for your company with you. Go ahead. I'll start an LA branch. I'm happy to do it.
Seriously. I think it's important to show emotions when you can.
I think it's the most beautiful thing that you can do is honestly not hold that stuff in. Just let it all out.
So I'm going to go way back. The first time I had considered taking my life was around sixth grade. And I only remember that because I've always been super type A. Like, I have to succeed. And this is weird because my mom is my biggest fan and advocate. She's always been like, you can do it, whatever. Like, if I came home with a C or D, it's okay, babe. we'll do better next time, you know? So for me, it somehow my brain swapped that and like, okay, so we have to then, because mom always knows that you're going to be okay. And I don't know if that's just, I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. I learned very slowly in the traditional way, and I couldn't get my homework done. And I remember going to my mom and saying, "Mom, I'm going to throw myself down the stairs and hope that I die." And I didn't have a concept of suicide at that time. And she called the school, and the school counselor called me in and talked to me. And that's when I learned of this concept, suicide. Because I couldn't finish my homework. Fast forward, throughout my teenage years, I was a self-harmer, unfortunately. My mom was born in 1950, in an age where you just, therapy wasn't a thing. If you were a woman in that time, you had hysteria, whatever. And so she didn't know how to help me. I didn't see a therapist until I left home for college, actually. But she was always just like, "I don't know how to help you with your emotional issues." And so I imagine I had undiagnosed major depressive disorder since sixth grade. I have always struggled with my emotions growing up. I was sensitive. And I think it's okay to be sensitive, but it's also
hard. When you
say
that to me, I love sensitive people. The world wouldn't be what it is without us.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we're always like thrown like, "Oh, you're too sensitive." I hate it when people, do you hate that when people say you're too sensitive? Yeah.
I'm not sensitive. I'm just feeling compassion for other people. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
Carrying the weight of the world. Okay.
Yeah.
But that was the thing, is I was always too sensitive until I was a major depressive, until I was a self-harmer, until I had tried to take my life when I was 18. Obviously didn't succeed, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tried multiple times since. And I've been lucky enough to have people in my life who were there to intervene. After my dad died, I felt that way. Mm-hmm. And I had a therapist who said, "Hey, next time you feel this way, can you give yourself 5 minutes? Because statistically, within that 5 minutes, you will change your mind." I said, "Yeah, I can promise you that." And so within my plan, this is ridiculous, within my plan, I would count out enough pills that could make me to 5 minutes. And without failure, at 5 minutes, I was like, "Nope, not today." I was like, "Wow. Yeah, that 5 minutes is real." I know there are people who have survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge and regretted it.
I'll tell you a statistic on that, actually, because I know an author that did. I forget his book. But the percentage of people that take their own lives, and I hope my listeners listen to this, and if you know somebody that's struggling with either suicidal ideations or is suicidal, that maybe you share the statistic. The statistic of people that take their own lives to suicide, jumping off of the Golden Gate Bridge, every single one of them that has survived has regretted it. And it's also the statistic, can't remember. I don't want to like quote numbers, but basically in a nutshell, 99% of people that take their own lives, if they could go backwards, wouldn't have done it. Mm-hmm. And then we find these things out by things like studies. I mean, very few people have survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, but there are people that have. So I had to jump in there and say that.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. There is a speaker who
Kevin Hines. Yes, yeah. I forget his book though, but I read it. It's very good.
Yeah. So that's kind of one of the first things that I always think about is like, "Oh, give myself 5 minutes." Mm-hmm. Other than that, my background is in theater. I grew up with a single mom and my, as an only child, I love being an only child and I will always be an only child because my mom's 73 and she can't have kids anymore. So,
I think you're safe. I think that you're safe being an only child. I'm just going to say that.
Don't do it, mom.
I don't think she has any eggs left. I think you're pretty good. Go ahead.
And I was both mostly, she was mostly a single mom because my dad spent a lot of my youth in prison as a black man. And in my master's degree, I did a lot of studies and a lot of critical race theory, which I know is very taboo in a lot of states now.
Oh, no. But well, really not in my house, but go on.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
It was a big, important thing for me to understand and get rid of a lot of my anger that I had grown up with. I grew up wishing I was white. I really, really, really begged my mom. I was like, I need to straighten my hair. I need to chemically relax it. Please let me dye it blonde. Like, I want to look like my family because I only grew up with my mom's side. And that was really tough for me not to have that. And I was angry and mad at my dad for a good portion of my life. And I regret that, but I know that it wasn't available to me to not be because there was a lot of discourse and conversation around who my dad was in my mother's life. And that's not my mom's fault. You know, friends are ride or die, you know, like, and you hear it. And so I thought that being black meant being criminal and being bad. And that was really tough for me. And so when I went into undergrad, I graduated from University of San Diego in theater and performance studies. And that was the first time that anybody had ever told me, like, you could do more. Go get a grad degree. And I was like, graduate school? Me? And I got a full ride at Texas A&M. And throughout that, I did my studies in prison theater. And I brought theater to inmates and created theater with inmates, which was incredible.
Oh, I love you. You're making me cry. This is like the most amazing thing ever. Wow.
So cool. They are the easiest actors to work with because they weigh their heart on their sleeves. They have nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
And they have so many stories that you can't even fathom to bring to the stage. And they taught me more than I ever brought to them. I would leave and sometimes just cry in my room because they gave me so much. So it was selfish. It was very selfish, all of the work that I did. But it allowed me to forgive and understand everything that my dad went through. And that's kind of, I think, one of the most foundational pieces of who I am and why I've like made myself into this position that I am with Suffer Out Loud. So,
okay. Well, not impressive at all. I'm just joking. That's pretty remarkable and unbelievable. I was also, just so you know, I was a theater major in college. I've been acting my whole life. I only do my musical theater now in my shower, but maybe someday that will change. but I think like it's for me, and I don't know about you, but I've always loved acting in theater and singing and performing because it was an escape. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. It was an escape for me because I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. And I always felt like I had to be funny and perform. And, you know, I still think I'm pretty funny. But I, now it's like, I'm not hiding behind that anymore. And so I just adore hearing a story of how you could do something like that. You know, and just take something that is so hard and difficult and just like not identifying, for example, with your race or what you are and like pretending like you were something else and wishing you were something else. That's just like not a journey I can ever understand, you know, but I know there's a lot of people that can, of feeling like you know, I mean, we all want to be something we're not, right? I mean, yeah. I've always wanted to be the petite flyer cheerleader, you know, that's like 5 feet and like weighs like 85
me
pounds.
Too.
Yeah,
I had to be in the back because I was tall and you have to.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I was like, I don't want to be like the person holding everybody up. I don't want to be like the tall dancer because I did dance. I did all that stuff. I always wanted to be like petite and little and, you know, and just like different from who I am. And so, I mean, your beautiful curls and your big giant smile. I mean, my audience, go to YouTube, everyone. That's what makes you you. And it's such a gift, you know, and then just to go to graduate school and do all the things you did is really a remarkable thing. I hope that people that are listening to this today, you know, sometimes I go into these episodes and like I was telling Danny, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I was running late. I was trying to get my kids home from school. I'm leaving early in the morning to fly. And I was just like, what's going to happen over the next hour of my life? Where is this conversation going to go? And she was like, can we talk before we start recording? And I tried to explain to her that the way, like my method of podcasting is if I talk to somebody for like, and I give them an agenda or something before I start, I can't do that. That's not just not like who I am. And it's not what makes the podcast what it is and these conversations what they are. And so I always tell my guests before we record, and I'll let my audience know that I think of these episodes as like sitting in a coffee shop. And I'm this person I love strangers more than people I know. I mean, I usually do. I usually love strangers like because I've been so hurt by people I know. So I'm one of those people, like I always love talking to the valet, or I like to talk to like people at restaurants, sitting at a bar. Or I like to talk to my waiter. And so that's what this is. It's like going into a coffee shop, meeting this fantastically wonderful person named Danny. And she tells me this story about how hard and dark her life has been and how she wanted to end it. But if from the outside she knew how special she is, that she does what she does to change the world, if you could look from the outside, and you're one of my listeners that I'm lucky and fortunate enough to have every week, they're not going to see that. And so they see you as like, wow, I can't believe that Danny did this. This is what we need, right? We need more of this.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And that's at Suffer Out Loud, that's one of the things that we try to do specifically, you know, Montana based, is we have a blog and we invite people to take over our social media. We really like try very hard to make it a collective conversation, because that's mm-hmm. the only way that you can break down that stigma. That's the only way that we can recognize that, yeah, there is a collective and there's a shared grief and there's a shared suffering. As unique as each person's individual suffering is, there is a seed where we all connect there in that suffering. And if we can recognize that, then we can build the bridges and we can find the light together, and it's okay to ask for help. And so asking people to share their stories and talk about it and normalize asking for help is really kind of the crux of the work that we do. It's like, hey, you're not less of a man or less of a woman or less of a mom if you say, hey, I'm freaking struggling. I need community. I need friends or family. I actually need financial support, whatever it is. If you ask for help, whether or not it happens that day or the day after, asking for help is half of the battle. And then people will rally behind you and make it happen. Hopefully. You know, and that's the hopefully is where we come in. But I agree with you. Everybody has traumas and struggles, and saying it out loud is important.
And suffering in silence, like we hear so many stories, right? I always bring up that dancer. What's his name? Now I'm blanking on his name. Twitch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
that passed away, like, God, it's been like a year. Was that a year ago? It's been a while.
Holy smokes. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And so
that was wild, yeah.
And nobody knew, like, he didn't talk about it. He was, as far as I mean, we don't know because we're not related to him and not in the family, but as far as the public knows. And so we hear so many stories about, like, oh, nobody knew, nobody talked about it. They weren't saying anything, which is very common in men. You know, I've had guests on that are male and they come on and they just say, I felt like it would be better. I wouldn't embarrass people if I talked about it. Or I was ashamed. And so much shame has to do with these feelings. And if so, we break the shame, which I think that's what you do, and you get people just to talk about it. What are some, like, are there some steps or some things that you tell people from Suffer Out Loud? Like, because I like to think that my listeners, I have listeners all over the world that come and listen to this. And so are there things that you can tell people besides I love the 5 minutes. I've never heard that before. I think that's a really big one.
The 5 minutes are, yeah, obviously a big one. And the reason that it resonated with me was like, oh, well, you know, if I'm going to take my own life, I'm just going to do it. But I can integrate that 5 minutes into my plan, which is morbid and disgusting, right? Mm-hmm. I hate that my brain works that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked. Like, my plan was that 5 minutes, it would take me 5 minutes to put my plan in action, and it worked. The other one is to know that 988 is available to you, even if you don't think you're going to take your life. I think I receive, at Suffer Out Loud, I receive a number of crisis calls from people who are like, well, I'm not going to kill myself today, but I needed to be heard. And I don't think people know that you can call 988 even if you don't have a plan in motion. You can call 988 even if you don't want to take your own life at that moment. You can call 988 if you just need to be heard. 988 is available to you without judgment. And it is, I think, run statewide. So it is locally, it's a local resource to you where they can refer you to other resources. You do not have to hit rock bottom to call 988 at all.
Thank you for saying that, because I don't think, and for people that don't know, because maybe somebody's listening in the United States, 988 is like 911, but for suicide prevention. So they enabled the 988 in the past year, right? Wasn't that?
Yeah, actually, they had a year anniversary. I think it was last month.
Okay. And one thing that you said in the very beginning that I wanted to go back to was that people that are in that place of being suicidal do not want to call 911 and do not want the police to come. Can you kind of, like, go into that and maybe explain that a little bit?
Well, first of all, calling the police can escalate the situation.
Yes.
Especially they show up with their lights.
mm-hmm.
Especially for BIPOC people. Mm-hmm. Don't just don't. Public announcement. Do not call the police on a BIPOC person for suicide. Find another resource. I guarantee you there's one in your community or a community nearby. Just don't. But they don't necessarily have the training, the mental health training, to be able to approach that. I think that anybody who wants to or needs to be well-versed in suicide prevention should get QPR trained.
Can you explain what that means?
You can do that online.
And what
QPR
what,
is question, QPR, question, persuade, refer. And it's a pretty common formula for all suicide prevention. Question, persuade, prefer. It looks different in different kinds of suicide prevention platforms and formats or whatever of how you can address suicide prevention or addressing a crisis situation. Question where they are, what is their safety level, Are they an imminent harm to themselves? Persuade them not to take their lives in whatever way that looks, and then refer them to the ongoing care that they could benefit from in the future. I'd say the persuade part is probably the hardest part, is what is it that I can say to persuade them from thinking, obviously. But the question is easy-ish. Maybe that's actually the hardest, because it's hard to actually say, do you want to commit suicide or die by suicide? We don't say commit anymore. That was my bad. Sorry. We don't say commit anymore. Commit assumes some sort of harm that somebody is doing on somebody else. So if you say commit suicide, somebody who committed suicide has done harm to somebody else. Whereas died by suicide takes the blame off of that person and also their family.
Well, it's very hard on the families. It's very hard. Yeah. I interviewed Kate Rule, who's a friend of mine, become a friend of mine now, and she lost her son, Warren, as a teen. And I think that it's extremely hard on the families to, you talked about in the beginning, there's no pain like the loss of somebody to a family member. It's different than any other kind of loss. And so when you say it that way, it just like kind of alleviates the unbearable pain that they're going to carry with them for the rest of their lives. You know, the guilt, all the things that go along with it. So
exactly.
I think that's really important.
Know, like saying committing a crime is very, and for some people, maybe this was for them their only way out at that moment, what they thought was their only way out. And that wasn't a crime that they were committing, but more of the release that they needed. And it shouldn't reflect on the family. And like we at Suffer Out Loud, and I think in most suicide prevention organizations, you know, you have to understand that losing somebody is not at the fault. Losing somebody to suicide is not at the fault of anybody. And we have to find every possible way to remind people that, and language matters. Suicide is 100% preventable, but with the support of your community. And that's hard to wrangle. It's really hard to get everybody on the same side and within the same mission of saving a life, because we all have our own lives. But it is preventable, but it's something that still happens and is not something that you can place blame on any one person. I think, at least in my situation and the people that I've lost to suicide and the people that I know who've lost loved ones to suicide, there's no one way to point like, oh, you did this wrong or you did that wrong. There's no way. So we can't use the word commit, because commit associates with a crime of an intentional act against. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's important, and I work really hard to maintain, and you know, muscle memory sometimes comes out, but if we all work to know that language matters, then we can continue fighting against these stigmas so that people can continue talking about it. Because if you continue saying commit, blah, 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 well, then we can't talk about that fact that I thought about suicide or you thought about suicide, because it sounds like a crime. So yeah.
And there's also like all this judgment and stigma against it. And, you know, people will carry that with them and point fingers and all the finger pointing and all the things that go along with it, which is just making the pain even worse. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. And it's a really tough thing. Like when I do speaking events and I say, hey, it's 100% preventable. And then there's that one person in the audience who's like, well, I did lose my son to suicide. It's like, but not in that case. Like, what do you say? it's not 100% preventable. It could be, but there, it could be if we all talk about it.
100%. I mean, we talk about it. We have free, I mean, there's so many things that could be done differently. You know, we need free mental health care in our country. Number one, if we just had that alone, like think about it. But hello, Pollyanna is back. but you know what I'm saying? But it's like if we just continue to talk about it, just talk about it, find somebody, help them, do things like, if you're a listener of mine, it's, you know, it's sometimes I feel like people think, oh, they're not for real. They're not really like, even if you were to hear your story or my story, there's so, just so much judgment. Like, well, why didn't you? Well, what is wrong with you? Because I didn't, because I am still here and like all the things that go behind it. So you should never like ever, ever, ever. We're lucky if somebody doesn't take their life and they do all the things that we've talked about today. But part of the reason that Danny also came on is because this is my platform. I will do this podcast for however many more years that I do it or however long I do it, knowing that I want to use this to help people with their mental health and help someone else and help prevent suicide, because it's a, it's an epidemic, like we said in the beginning, and Danny does too. And we're about to go into September. I'm recording this on August 30th, and September is Suicide Prevention Month. And so that's part of why I really wanted you to come on, because this will come out next Tuesday. So when, by the time my audience is listening to this, they can hear it. And if you don't know what to do, and say you have a teenager or you have a neighbor or you have somebody that says they're suicidal or struggling with it, tell someone. Like, there's people, there's resources. I talk a lot about, you know, mental health care is very expensive. And so a lot of times you can reach out to your local university, because there's therapists in training that, you know, they will offer you free healthcare. So there's resources out there, but you have to kind of reach out and try and figure out ways to get those resources, you know, and help people.
Also, do you have any thoughts on that? I know I personally serve just Montanans, mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, your life is more important than our region. If you're listening to this and you need somebody to help you, big part of my job is doing the legwork, because I know when you are super depressed or you're in crisis, reaching out to therapists or finding the right fit, it's just, it's not happening. Mm-hmm. I will do the research for you. I will call and make sure that they are accepting patients. I will listen to you and say, what demographic of therapist do you want to see? Do you want to see them in person? Do you want to see them virtually? Do you, you know, what gender, sexuality, what religious affiliate, like whatever it is, I will do the research for you, and I will make the phone calls, and I will facilitate introductions. You can just call me. Yes, I prioritize Montanans because we are Montana funded, but your life is way more important than our region, and you can reach out to me from New York to LA, and I will help you with that as well.
How do people find you? Can you share that with the audience?
Go to www.sufferoutloud.org, or dani@sufferoutloud.org is my email. Recently the New York Times reached out for this morning. Actually, I did a weird interview with New York Times, and they found us just by Googling suicide prevention or suicide statistics in Montana, and we popped up, I think, third in the search. So we're pretty accessible. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook or whatever platform you're on at Suffer Out Loud. My name's Danny Sather. You can find me personally and reach out, preferably through the business platform. But
do you have any like closing remarks? And I just said like again. Trying so hard, everyone. It's not working.
Keep like saying like, because like is really like fun to like.
It's like say, when it's gray. Like,
it's yeah. really like gray. closing remarks. I would say, yeah, I talked about some dark shit today about my own life. I don't want that to give you ideas, but if you are already thinking about it, give yourself that 5 minutes. Because I know what it's like for somebody to be like, to be like, give yourself 5 minutes. And I'm like, okay, let me integrate that 5 minutes into my ritual before to, you know, it seems so condescending because I know I can wait. But if you force yourself to wait, it will change your life. And if you can't, 988, 988, 988, 988, 988, call 988, please. And if you want to talk to me, I will talk to you. I will literally talk to you. I am available 10 to 5, Monday through Friday. And then you can leave a message otherwise, and I will always call you back. But there's always somebody whose life has been changed by you. Literally, you have changed somebody's life and you matter. You have changed the trajectory of somebody's life and you don't even know it. It's so, so true that you're here.
I say that all the time. I say, I had somebody on one time and he said, your piece of the puzzle matters. And I always remember that when I'm kind of struggling, I go, well, my piece of the puzzle matters. And I say, keep going. Your story matters. You matter, Danny. I hope at the end of this episode, you don't think it's so gray anymore.
Okay. You are, it's backwards, but you are enough.
You are enough. You really are. Everyone listening to this, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for always supporting me. I truly appreciate my listeners more than you'll ever know. I truly appreciate meeting Danny today. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady. I feel lucky to know you, Danny.
Likewise. Oh, side note, can I just interject? Megan has the most incredible blue eyes, and I have been distracted this entire time.
I paid you to say that. Thank you very much, Danny. Actually, the check is in the mail.
Also, second of all, if you do watch the video, check out my nose because it's my dad's.
You have your dad's nose. I have my dad's nose too, and my dad watches over me in heaven. Yeah.
Both of our dads.
We have our dad's noses. Everyone, thank you so much. Like I say, every episode in closing, be happy by making other people happy. Thanks, Danny.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.